Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host Curtis with my co-host Aaliyah, and we are here today with Andre from the band Locrian, who are going to be releasing a new album in a couple months via Profound Lore. They've been around for a little while, so we thought we'd have him on to talk about the band, and he also does PR, and he's been in the industry for a little while, so we figured he'd be a good person to chat with. So to start off, Aaliyah is going to start the ceremonies.
Oh, sure. Well, thank you so much, Andre, for coming on our podcast. Really quick first, before we dive into anything else, would you give our listeners a brief nutshell version of who you are and what you do within the heavy music industry?
Great. I play mostly guitar, but I also do other things, field recordings, sometimes electronics in the band Locrian. Locrian is my band that I started with my bandmate Terrence Hannum in 2005. We've done probably in the 20 or 30s number of releases, a lot of them small edition type releases. Around 2010, we decided to get a drummer, become a bit more structured in different ways. So we play with an amazing drummer named Stephen Hess. He's a drummer that I was a big fan of his work before he started playing with us. So Steven has been playing with us since 2010. Locrian, we've released records on a number of labels that your listeners might be aware of, such as Bloodlust, a very important power electronics label for me. UTech Records, a great record label out of Milwaukee, making really beautiful designs for years. Releasing really interesting experimental artists, Profound Lore Records, metal, just all sorts of really interesting stuff out of Canada, Relapse Records. I've also done things that your listeners might be interested in. I've taught metal yoga. I stopped doing that really for a while, maybe I'll do that again. What else have I done? I'm also a leader in higher education. So that's my day job. And that's part of why I've been a little bit dormant with music in the last 7 years. So I feel like I'm waking up from a slumber in 2022, and everything's a bit different than it was when Locrian released our last record. So I'm learning a lot of things over.
Yeah. Well, one of those things that we can talk about today is PR. As our listeners know, C-Squared is primarily a PR company, and we like to talk about that here on the podcast sometimes. And since you have some background in it, can you share a little bit with us about how you got started doing your own PR and what that journey looked like?
Great question. And that's something that I omitted from my biography, is that I used to run a PR company, Ablution Media. I've now started that again for my own work. I got into that because my band Locrian was starting to play shows. We started out being very not serious, and we didn't even think of ourselves as a band at first. As we started to think of ourselves as a band and having a distinct sound, we needed to promote ourselves. So we wanted to get shows, we wanted to release records, we wanted someone else to pay for our recording time. And so I started learning about PR. One thing that really helped me is that Terrence and I, the other founding member, we used to work at Columbia College Chicago, which is an arts and media college. And we had a release, I think it was around 2007, and we were talking about what do we do to promote this. And one of our colleagues who worked in our portfolio center ran a PR firm. And I met with him and he gave me all this great advice. At the time, we sort of had this allergic reaction to thinking about promoting ourselves, right? and I think a lot of people do, excuse my bings. And the person who's working in our portfolio center at our college, he had been a PR agent for a number of artists that I never thought had PR agents. So one of them, it was one of the His Hero Is Gone related bands. I think it was Tragedy, or it was From Ashes Rise. It was one of those bands. And I was like, what? Like, those bands have a PR firm? Like, those guys were like crust punks, the opposite of who I would associate with having like a PR firm. And so he gave us all sorts of tips. He'd also worked with bands like Neurosis. And so, you know, Neurosis is one of my favorite bands, possibly my favorite heavy band. And so he was not really focusing on his PR business anymore. I think he got burnt out. And he was like, here's this, my list of PR contacts. And he gave me like this list of like 500 people that were unsorted. I had no idea who many of these people were. And I just, he was like, you know, you could pay me a lot of money to do PR for you, or you could just take this list and reach out to people directly. And so Terrence and I, at first we both took turns at contacting these people. And I thought that our music was very difficult for, I didn't think it was gonna get any traction. And to my surprise, a lot of these people wrote back to me and wanted to hear things. At the time, one of the things that Dave, who is the person in our portfolio center that gave me, he gave me this advice that was like, start a relationship with the people that are, they want to write, that you want to have write about your band. And he was like, one thing that would be great is if you have free things, t-shirts, records, tapes, CDs, send them to those people. They're not used to getting physical copies of things, like even in 2007. And so I got really good at going to the post office and really, like, I guess as an anthropologist, because my background is in anthropology, I think about it as like this gift economy. Like when you send a gift to someone, you create this relationship. And I was surprised at how many people wanted to write about our stuff. So really early on, we were improvising a lot of our stuff. So we practiced maybe when we had a show for like an hour. And most of the time when Terrence and I would practice early on, we were just hanging out, you know, we were just having fun. He's, you know, one of my closest friends, if not my closest friend. And so we just had like a lot of fun. And we, I guess when we were not like practicing or playing a show, we were working on relationships with writers and other people in the music community. And it was really fun. So that's a bit about how we got started.
That's great and very generous of your friend to be like, here, take my list.
Yeah, it totally was.
So moving right along, so your music, like you said, isn't exactly commercial in any way, shape, or form. So how did you guys kind of get yourself on some of these bigger labels that, I mean, the one, most of them aren't really known for putting out your style. So what did you do?
I mean, great question. I wish I had a magic bullet for people who want to get on a special label. I guess what we did is that at first we were playing a lot of noise shows. And so we fit in with certain artists in that scene in a way. We were improvising loosely structured arrangements, I guess, around loosely structured arrangements. We were playing with people like Bloody Minded, people in the noise scene. So we started where we started. So we started with these labels that were doing small editions of certain releases, people that were in our community. And I think over time we like built up. So we do one release, we would get a bunch of write-ups and reviews from writers, surprisingly good, even though I anticipated that they weren't. And I don't even think early on, I don't know if I believed that we were doing something unique, but now in hindsight, as we're doing, like we've been recently doing some archival releases for digital platforms, And I'm really like surprised, and I look back at a younger version of myself with a bit more compassion than I did at the time. So we just kept like making relationships. I think around 2009, we were playing shows, and Brandon from, who at the time was working at Pitchfork, invited us to play in New York at one of the Show No Mercy events. And so we played the show. We didn't have a drummer at the time. So we played with these bands that were a bit more traditional in some ways. Like we played this great show with, it was like with Fuck the Facts. Anal Cunt was the headliner, who I don't really enjoy Anal Cunt, and I didn't really at the time. And there were some other bands that were playing it, and that really helped us get some other shows. And I think it helped us to build up sort of like a lot of press quotes. That helped us get better shows, helped us get onto into the ears of people who are working at the places like Relapse, Profound Lore, and other labels.
So I have a quick follow-up before Aaliyah gets onto her next question. So how your main theme seems to be atmosphere, unless I'm completely mental in thinking that, but
No, that's a great interpretation. I think there's many ways to interpret what we do, and that's awesome.
So, well, I mean, in the last video you guys, the recent video you guys did, I mean, it looked almost like it was like a part of a horror soundtrack. Are you guys looking to move into that type of area, like trying to provide horror type soundtrack type things?
Yeah, that's one of the, we take from many different influences. Like we just love music.
Yeah.
And horror soundtracks are one of the things that have been an inspiration for, especially for Terrence. And so that is an aesthetic that I think works really well when artists that we're working with are thinking about how do we create a visual for the music that they're creating. Definitely atmospheric is one thing we're really interested in, but we have some songs that maybe don't fit in quite so well. Like the first song on our first Relapse album that we did specifically for Relapse, Eternal Return, is people have described it as being like very shoegaze. and I think that's cool. And so that's definitely an influence as well, but it kind of came out organically. Like we weren't trying to force shoegaze. We were just playing music and doing stuff that we liked, really.
I got one more follow-up, Aaliyah. I'm really sorry. Now, I've been noticing as well, you seem like you're getting on a lot of playlists with the new single. How, when it's so non-commercial, it's awesome, but it's not like, I've been seeing you posting them and I'm like, how did he do that? Like, cause it's not a commercial song in any way, shape or form. So how?
I mean, you put us on a playlist. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I did.
I honestly feel like I really stopped thinking about promoting my music at the end of 2015. I felt burnt out by that. And I feel like I'm waking up from this slumber, and all of a sudden, playlists are so important. Like I remember when I was doing metal yoga classes in Chicago, Becky Laverty, who does like the PR for Roadburn and Relapse, she was like, oh, you need to do like some metal yoga playlists. And at the time I was kind of like, I don't know, who's using Spotify? Like, I don't really like this. She was right. it probably would have helped me to do that all along. Now that I'm looking at the playlist, I feel two ways about Spotify. And Spotify is, I think, the dominant playlist provider. I mean, I really don't like the fact that they have some people on their platform that are promoting some things that I don't think are helping out humanity. Like Joe Rogan has the tendency to promote things that I don't agree with politically. But I also think it's really cool that it's this platform where people are really connecting over music that they're sharing. I like that it can we make music really accessible to people who, like, when we first released Locrian releases, like our first release was an edition of 25 copies. And then we've been pretty careful not to reissue things like that in a mass quantity. But at the same time, as that, it's kind of cool that only a few people got to experience that, it's also not very inclusive to the people who aren't in our geographic area. And I hate hearing about people paying like a lot of money for these releases, which we never intended to see for going for like a lot of money. So I don't know how we've gotten on playlists, but I've been enjoying like, there's the artist pick feature on Spotify. And I've been enjoying, like, Biden declared that this is Black Music Month. And I've been enjoying the fact that we can really, I think it's one of the good things that Biden has done in a way that I don't know if he anticipated, but we've been just trying to promote as many Black artists as possible this month. And it's been kind of fun because the three of us in Locrian, we just love music, and we've been, it's been an avenue for us to really kind of connect over things that we care about and artists that we really want other people to hear.
All right. So I wanted to ask, you mentioned before that, you mentioned before that you feel like you're coming out of this sort of dormancy of not promoting your music. So maybe can you share a little bit about how you have promoted the band in the past and what seems to be different now by your perception and struggles you might encounter now that you didn't then?
Sure. So promoting the band in the past, I think initially was the hardest because we didn't have money to hire a PR agent and we didn't have much recognition. We were like, Terrence and I grew up in the punk and hardcore scenes. And so as much as I'd like to think that people knew about our music before we were in Locrian, I don't think that they did. I think early on, it was this needing to connect with writers. And so when you get a writer writers are really trying to be like connoisseurs of your music. They're trying to appreciate it. They're trying to find what's unique about it and also to give you creative feedback. So I think to appreciate something doesn't mean that you necessarily even like it. But early on, there was a lot of writers in Chicago especially that helped us out and wrote about us. And that really gave us like this foundation to build off of. And so I think the fact that you have like these press blurbs, it gives the artist a certain, I guess, maybe like a legitimacy or an authority. At the time, I think it was more important than it is today. Like right now, I'm not really worried about who's gonna write about our stuff. I'm more interested in getting my music to the writers that I like reading. And so I've been really selective about the writers that I've been contacting. And if they give us negative feedback, I mean, I'll take it. I don't really care. Like, one of my favorite writers is Grayson Curran, who writes for Pitchfork and a number of other different publications. He recently wrote about Matt Pike in a way that I think really appreciated Matt Pike's great musicianship, but also critiqued some of the choices that he has made. And so people like Grayson, I like communicating with them. I like having that relationship where I'm sending him music. Maybe he likes it, maybe he doesn't. And I just appreciate what they're into. But today I feel like in order to get traction, it's like if Locrian were thinking about going on tour, we have to think about metrics. And I hate that this is the reality that we live in and it bothers me. But I'm not Neil Young. I can't overthrow Spotify on my own. So I would rather than fight against Spotify as a small artist, I would rather think about leaning into the good qualities of a platform like Spotify. So you have promoters who are looking at your Spotify numbers. They're looking at how probably about how, who has written about you. They're looking at how many people are following you on Instagram and on Facebook. And really up until like 2 months ago, I've been like very much ignoring my Instagram account and my other social media, because it's another platform that I feel like two ways about. I don't like how it makes me feel like I need to keep checking something, but I also like the fact that I get to communicate with people like you that are really cool and smart and doing interesting things. And so I'm trying to lean into those tendencies. It's the world we live in. So like right now I'm really interested in like guitar pedals. And so I've been reaching out to some different guitar pedal manufacturers and they're like, all right, well, Instagram followers, Spotify plays, show us all these different metrics. And I that's the world we live in. And so right now I'm trying to figure out what are the important playlists to get on and how do we get on those playlists with this music that is, you know, our single is like 7.5 minutes long or something like that. It starts out really slow and builds up.
Yeah, which is notoriously difficult to get put on Spotify curated playlists.
I'm sure.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
So you guys, we've got about 4 minutes left, so we're going to have to boogie on the questions and the answers. So Aaliyah, do you got a final question you would like to ask Andre?
Oh, I thought that was a pretty good train of thought we were going on there. So you mentioned before we started that you maybe wanted to hear something from some advice from us, or yeah. Is there any particular topic you wanted to hear like Curtis or my thoughts on?
I mean, I think a lot of experimental artists that are doing like this, this category that Locrian is in, people like Insect Arc, maybe like Nah, people that are doing things that are difficult to categorize, what do you think they should be doing to promote their music that they typically aren't? Is there any advice?
I think what you were doing is... I think what you're doing already is the smartest move, because most people in your genre do not do that. You are you actually came to me, you said thank you, you commented, you did the whole nine yards. Even most regular bands don't do that, right? So to be honest, what you did I think is probably really smart. I don't know if that was pre-planned or not, but even if it was, kudos to you. If it wasn't, I think that's the best thing a band can do, is they should just be reaching out to writers that way or to playlisters or whatever, commenting on their stuff, actually trying to build a relationship with them. That's my advice.
Yeah, so it's like that advice that you mentioned even 7 years ago or whenever you first started, that was the advice from your friend, was to develop relationships with people that you want to work with, basically, or the who you want to write about your music. And that still is what you have to do. I mean, that is still the sort of advice generally of what to do. And why wouldn't you want to connect with those people and sort of build a friendship with them, you know, if they write things that you enjoy reading and things like that. So that advice still holds true today. The only difference is social media is very different now, and mm-hmm. it's a task in and of itself for sure. Curtis, do you have any final questions for Andre?
No, we should probably wrap it up.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast and sharing your wisdom with us and your experience. And everyone listening, until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.